50 years.
Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour on this Thursday, the 29th day of November 2012. I'm Jeff Seifert for Raven News. Fans of gold medal basketball in Southeast Alaska are hoping to see one of their greatest players named to the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. Herb Diedrichsen played for Sheldon Jackson School in Sitka in the mid-1940s. He later dominated the gold medal tournament as a member of Sitka's legendary Alaska Native Brotherhood team. But people who watched Diedrichsen play, and those who played against him, say he was far more than a regional standout. Nominating documents to the Hall of Fame refer to Diedrichsen as one of the finest basketball players ever. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Gil Truitt grew up with Herb Diedrichsen in Sitka and attended the Bureau of Indian Affairs Elementary School with him in downtown Sitka. But they rarely played sports together. Truitt says that when he was in the equivalent of Little League Baseball, Diedrichsen was playing American Legion. In short, Diedrichsen was a natural.
He had the ability in all sports. Things that coaches try to teach to Herb, it came natural. He didn't have to work hard, but I never knew of anyone who worked harder in any sport than Herb. He was continually and constantly trying to improve himself as an athlete.
Truitt is working with a number of others in Southeast Alaska to have Diedrichsen named to the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame for his abilities in basketball. This is their third try. Part of the problem is that Diedrichsen played, by contemporary standards, in relative obscurity. To help put Diedrichsen in the context of his times, his advocates are drawing on support from Diedrichsen's peers. John Abel played for Oregon State in their national championship bid against the University of San Francisco Dons in 1955. He saw Diedrichsen play at Mount Edgecombe in an exhibition game against a semi-pro team. Diedrichsen scored 44 points, matched against a center who was almost a foot taller.
You know, when I was at Oregon State, when I was a freshman, we played USF, where they had Bill Russell and Casey Jones and that crew, and we lost to them by 1 point. And the winner of that game was going to win the national championship. And then the next week, our coach, Slaps Gill, he called me in and he said, John, man, have you ever seen anybody that could control a game like Casey Jones? And I responded, I said, Coach, to be honest with you, I've seen one better. And he looked at me. He said, you're kidding. I said, no, Coach, just from my perspective, I've seen one better, and that's Herb Diedrichsen, who lived in Sitka, Alaska.
Abel went on to become a high school and college coach, running up a record of 115-1 at Butte College at one point, in a program that produced 15 All-Americans. He is blunt in his assessment of Diedrichsen's ability.
They never saw a basketball team at any level that Herb Diedrichsen couldn't have played for. As a point guard, Herb Diedrichsen was 40 years ahead of his time.
He was getting lob passes from Roger Lang. Today they call that the alley-oop pass. But Herb was getting those passes, tipping one hand, reaching up and just tipping it into the basket. And his elbow was even at the rim. He could jump so high.
And in the 1940s, dunking wasn't allowed. Gil Truitt doesn't feel the need to define Diedrichsen as a great player of his era. He says Diedrichsen was one of those rare athletes who were among the best of any era.
People ask that question, how can you compare athlete today with 50, 60 years ago? I've always answered that question, including with the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame, that Herb would have been a star today because of the attributes that he had, great quickness, quick hands, long arms, talk about speed, jumping ability.
Truitt says Diedrichsen was as menacing on defense as on offense. On one occasion, when Truitt was on the same court playing against Diedrichsen, his coach advised the entire team, if he comes at you, turn around 180 degrees and pass the ball. The question that remains, though, for all of us who've heard of Casey Jones and of Bill Russell, but are just learning about Herb Diedrichsen, is why didn't he go on to stardom? Truitt says Diedrichsen was recruited by just about every major basketball school.
But why he did not accept any of the scholarships, he never did say. I did not pursue it. Herbie loved Alaska. He was happy here, and this is where he stayed.
There are 43 nominees for induction to the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame this year, including four-time Iditarod champion Jeff King, who will likely get close consideration, and Senator Ted Stevens, who is not really known for his athletic ability, but was nominated for his support of gender equity in sports. The selection committee will choose 5. Public voting is online and closes on Friday, November 30th. The address to vote is alaskasportshall.org. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And you can hear more of our conversation about the life and times of basketball legend Herb Diedrichsen during the debut broadcast of KCAW's new public affairs program, Soundcheck, tomorrow morning, beginning at 8:30 a.m. State Representative Bill Thomas said on Tuesday that he was 99.9% sure he'd asked for a recount in the race to keep his seat in the legislature. On Wednesday, he made it official. The Haines Republican filed a recount request with the State Division of Elections. It's scheduled for Monday at 9 a.m. in Juneau. Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ-Tompkins currently holds a 34-vote lead in the race, and he's received mail from the state bearing the title Representative-Elect on the address label. He says he'll attend the recount in person. Thomas said he'll be traveling out of town during the recount. The race for District 34 has been back and forth since election night. Christ-Tompkins was up by 44, then down by 2, then tied with Thomas, then up by 28. The final vote count put the race at a 34-vote margin. If officially elected, Christ-Tompkins would become the youngest current member with the Alaska Legislature, but not the youngest ever. That title belongs to Terry Gardner, who was elected at age 22 in 1973. He became Speaker of the House at age 28. Some of Alaska's small boat fishermen will have to carry an onboard observer when they participate in federal fisheries next year. The government's newly restructured program goes into effect in January. For the first time, boats under 60 feet and halibut vessels are included. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Larger groundfish vessels have long been required to carry observers in federal fisheries for part or all of their time at sea, depending on their size. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration primarily uses these observers to record and manage bycatch, which is the unintentional catch of fish that the vessel wasn't targeting. For the most part, small boat owners and halibut fishermen have not been included until now. Julie Spiegel is a spokesperson for NOAA Fisheries in Alaska.
The new observer program applies to vessels and processors of all sizes, including the halibut sector. And it divides the existing observer program into 2 observer coverage categories, full coverage and partial coverage. The category for partial observer coverage, that is, those not required to have an observer on their vessel at all times, will have a new funding and deployment system.
That partial coverage category now includes the halibut sector, as well as vessels that are 57.5 feet or less in length. The agency will randomly choose boats on which they'll deploy observers. Fishermen and processors pay for the program through a 1.25% assessment on the value of the catch. Spiegel says the point of including smaller boats is to improve the agency's data and more equitably distribute industry costs. For this first year, at least, vessels under 40 feet will not have to carry any observers, although they will still have to pay the fee.
NOAA Fisheries did work very closely with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, fishermen, processors, and other stakeholders on the restructuring of the observer program. And that process included quite a bit of opportunity for the public to comment. To help shape the new program.
But major concerns linger for small boat operators, many of whom have very limited room on board for their own crew, much less another person. Fishermen are also concerned that bad weather and other logistical problems could complicate getting an observer on board when they're required. Linda Mankin is director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association in Sitka.
From the beginning on this issue, the small boat fleet has said we're willing to pay in on this program. We're willing to give the agency all the data they need for management of the fisheries, but we need a system that'll work for the small boat fleet that's not overly disruptive to our businesses or overly costly to small operations.
According to Bankin, NOAA did not accommodate many of the concerns raised by small boat owners. Instead of human observers, Bankin said the fleet had asked for electronic monitoring with onboard cameras. Such systems are in use elsewhere in the world, including the halibut fishery in British Columbia, and Bankin says her group spearheaded a pilot program using the technology for the last 2 years.
And the program was successful with a 96% success rate on species identification. We provided that data to the agency that were our project partners. We expected that would ensure that EM would be available with small boat fleet as an alternative to humans in 2013 when this program went into effect, but the agency hasn't come through in meeting that commitment.
According to NOAA Fisheries, electronic monitoring will not be allowed as an alternative to human observers, at least during the first year of the program. However, the agency says it's working with a contractor to develop the technology, and vessel operators can volunteer to help with the study. NOAA Fisheries staffers have been scheduling public outreach events to talk with fishermen about the new rules. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
With winter weather upon us, Sitka police say road safety is a growing concern. The days are shorter. Today the sun rose at 8:13 and set at 3:28, or will set, so the streets are dark during peak traffic times. Lieutenant Barry Allen says the limited visibility makes accidents more likely.
Well, everybody's going to and from work and to and from school in the dark. So, yeah, it does make a difference, especially if you get a light rain or a light snow going on at the same time. That's actually caused a couple of pedestrians in the past to get hit, even on the main roads where they're fairly well lit.
Police say they'll be enforcing parking regulations so they can keep the roads open as possible. If the Department of Transportation deems a car to be a hazard, police will impound the car and issue a citation. Allen says that while there is some lag time between when it snows and when they start writing tickets, people need to move their cars as soon as possible, regardless of whether snow is on the ground. That's it for Raven News for this hour. You're listening to KCAW Sitka. It is 1 minute past the hour.